I'd like to invite your attention to Ephesians chapter 5. I was challenged this morning with the devotions that Brother Andy shared with us and the clay that Jesus used to anoint the blind man's eyes. Ordinary clay, but it was special because Jesus touched it and it became a healing property. And I think that's parallel to our lives today. Ordinary clay man becomes healing property when it's touched by Jesus and his life and reaching out to other people. Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians is a book that is very interconnected. And it's hard to just take one verse out of there back up just a little bit. You can take a lot of single verses and talk about each verse there for quite a bit. But I'd like to look at one thing in particular here. In verse 1, it says, "Be therefore followers of God as dear children." One thing that I remember from a number of years ago is that I think it was I've had the person's name on the tip of my tongue, but I don't remember his name, but I do remember what he said. And he said, "Whenever you come across the word therefore, look back to see what it's there for." And so when we see this verse here, "Be therefore followers of God as dear children," we look back just a few verses, and it gives some guidelines for living the Christian life. And he gives a number of them here, but he closes with these two verses there at the end of chapter 4. And, of course, he doesn't close with those because there was no chapter divisions when he wrote the letter. But he says, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." This morning I'd like to think about how does the church look to the world around us? How does it look? And in this chapter we can see how it looks to God. And in the last part of this chapter, we have some distinct comparisons between husband and wife relationship and Christ and the church. And I think that is some really clear guidelines on how the church looks to God. Many of us have made promises that are important. In marriage, we make this promise that we will love and cherish. In fact, I think that I will pull the exact words here. For many of us, anyhow, maybe some of us got married using a different book, but this is what we say. "Will you love and cherish, provide and care, both her and him, in health and sickness, in prosperity and adversity, exercise patience, kindness, and forbearance toward her, live with her, him, in peace, as becometh a faithful Christian, and forsaking all others, keep yourself only unto her, him, as long as you both shall live." You know, all of us that are married have answered that in the affirmative, and that covers a lot of ground. You know, we don't have very many other written rules to govern our marriage. We depend very much on the Spirit that is given, and And I'm not saying that we don't have any failures. We do have some failures. And I recognize that, and I recognize that a sermon, a message like this might work several ways. But we are going to look at the Word of God. We want to look at the Word of God, and we want to come to a place that we are not. If you're lacking this morning, if you're not where you want to be, there is a way here that is showing you how to come to a place where you can be. But the thing I want to focus on mainly is that God uses this picture of a husband and wife as a picture of himself and his bride. Almost everybody will congratulate a young couple that is planning, that announces their engagement. Almost everybody will congratulate them on their wedding day. They will make good wishes and so on. But in general society today, many people expect that to fade out in a relatively short period of time. A number of years ago when I did a study, 7 years was the expected life of a marriage. And I don't know how much of that has changed. I know many people are living together without that marriage commitment. And so I don't know really where it is there. But I was blessed yesterday when I came over here to actually look up Bruce to see if he would have a message, but he didn't. But I found a number of young couples to young couples together. These people were married for 20 years, you know. I think that's young now, but probably those of you that aren't married yet think that's old. But, you know, that's simply a matter of perception, perspective. These people, there were a number of them together. They all got married in the same year, and that was really a blessing. That's been 20 years already. It's hard to believe. But it's a testimony to the commitment that we expect when we make those promises. It's a testimony of commitment that what we are looking forward to when we make those commitments. And it's a very important thing. And again, that's what Christ is looking for. This is the relationship that Paul used to say that is the different is the comparison between Christ and the church. So again, there's many that congratulate a couple at the beginning, but soon they expect that honeymoon to end and the monotony and boredom to set in, and there's a lot of jokes about marriage because of that reason there. They just don't expect it to continue. And but I'd like to look at what makes it last. Somebody has said that I remembered early in my life, early in my married life, it said the most important thing that a father can do for his children is to love his mother well, love their mother well. And I think that that's the one thing that gives security that nothing else can really do, is when there is that investment in that. We can talk about the home as a little piece of heaven, and I think it often is that. I think that in the Christian home that's really the closest thing to heaven that we can have here on earth. There is quite a few comparisons that we can make between the Christian home and our hope of it and our hope of heaven there. One is some of the most prominent ones are love, of course. We expect heaven to be nothing but love. And in the home, we are in the company of those that we love. And many times for holidays or some other important celebrations, you have a grand incoming of people coming from all directions. And where are they going? For many, they're going home. And that is significant. And then it's also a place of security. Usually we can rest secure in the knowledge that we are safe here at home. People don't invade homes. It was really interesting to me to visit last fall. John and Rose had a few things taken from their garage. People just walked into their garage during the middle of the day and took some things. And the things that they took, incidentally, were not valuable at all. Some almost non-working tools, and just they weren't very valuable. But one of the things that they did take that was valuable was this very sense of security. It really did work on the children in a significant way of not feeling secure, because actually someone was able to come in and just help themselves to some stuff. And so while we were there, which is a couple of weeks later, they were very concerned that the doors were locked and that the garage door was not open, and a number of things that took some security, or took a measure of security there from them. The biggest thing that we can do to provide security in our home is to not have a burglar alarm, but to have that security that the children know that their parents love them and provides that place. Love multiplies, it does not divide. Gary Chapman has 7 secrets to a love as a way of life. And I just list those here, and they're all listed in the book of Ephesians. We have kindness, we have patience, we have forgiveness, we have courtesy, we have humility, generosity, and honesty. And I read the verse already about being kind, be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. When we are kind to someone, we feel warmer to that person. And when we feel warm to someone, it's very easy to be kind to him. And that just is a continual cycle. If you're kind to someone, you feel warm to that person. When you feel warm to that person, it's easy to be kind to him. And it continues. And so, you know, using that in reverse, sometimes things work in reverse as well. When you're warm to a person, or if you can't feel warm to a person, be kind to them, and then you'll feel warm. Sometimes that works. I just listened this past week to a story about the reverse psychology that sometimes works. And it worked in our family on peas. We made a rule in our house that you were not allowed to eat peas unless you liked them, unless you wanted to, because they were very special, and we hardly ever got peas. Or we didn't get enough peas. I could eat a big bowl of peas all by myself. But so we told the children, you don't have to eat these unless you like them. And they didn't take them very long until they all wanted peas, because this was something special. But I was reading listening to a story about Captain Cook. He circled the earth, and he circled the world in his ship there, and he discovered a cure for scurvy was to eat vegetables, we know, but sauerkraut was really the only thing that they had back then that could last a long time. But the men hated sauerkraut. They were used to eating hardtack and biscuits, but they'd get scurvy. And so he wanted his men to be healthy, and he wanted them to all eat sauerkraut. But they hated it. And so he said, from now on, sauerkraut is reserved only to the officers and to it was just the elite, just the top echelon of people that were allowed to have sauerkraut. Well, then everybody clamored for it. You know, everybody wanted it because it was only for those few people. Well, you know, sometimes that works in other places too. You know, sometimes if you think that it's reserved for a few, maybe we want to get in on this. Well, this is something that is reserved for a few. This genuine beauty that God has prepared is only for those that are really serving God in the first place. You know, the home is a beautiful place, whether a person, and marriage is a beautiful institution, whether or not somebody is a Christian. It still has its place. It still is beautiful. But it's much more beautiful when both are serving the Lord and becomes a very beautiful picture of Christ and the church. What are some things some practices that you have had that help you to enrich your relationship? And I'll just list a number of generalities, and probably some of those will be in your line of things too. But one is to remember important dates. Remember, a lot of times people get into trouble and sometimes dates are hard for certain people to remember. They're easy for me to remember, so I don't really have a lot of sympathy if you don't remember those important dates. I've heard stories about people that forget their anniversaries and birthdays and so on, and it's just different for different people. But dates for me are easy to remember, and it was really interesting last year, 2014, that one important date for me was the day I became a Christian, which was November 2nd, 1969. It was on a Sunday night. And the day I had my first date was on November the 16th, 1975. And it happened to be that the calendar was exactly the same on those years. And then 2014 was also exactly the same. So those dates all coincided on the same day. It was on a Sunday night, on a Sunday night, on a Sunday night. Yeah, so that was interesting. 2014, 1975, and 1969 all have the same calendar. And every 6 years that could happen, but it's an irregular one because of leap year coming in. Well, that's easy for me to remember. So that's something that comes a little bit more naturally. Me and my brother Steve here, he knows everybody's birthday on the calendar. And maybe it runs in the family just a little bit there on that. But I don't know that. But for some of you, there's something like that that'll indicate whether or not you really care, and you want to put that into, you want to use that to help build a relationship. I'd like to stress the point here is that there's a lot of different ways to build, and it's by showing that you care, showing that you love. When we got married, we promised both sides that we will love and cherish, especially on the men's side. I'm going to check this again, and I'm not sure that actually says that on the ladies' side here. Yeah, it says, will you love and cherish? Okay, both sides. Both sides say love and cherish. Okay. And there's certain things that we can say that we like. And we might, we might like certain kinds of food and so on, but there's a specialness to cherishing Cherishing means that we keep it close, actually keep it warm. That's what it means. And so that's what's going to have to be done in order for it to make it work. We must spend quality time together. The husband-wife relationship is a lasting relationship. It's the one that is going to outlast the parent-child relationship. It's going to be a different kind of relationship than the parent-child relationship, even though those are very close. There's a very close. But there must be some time spent together that is, and I'll say that it needs to be absent from the children and the way we found that was in our home was to have a cup of tea after the children went to bed. And it was late, but this was a very regular occurrence. The teapot got put on and events of the day were shared, and the little things that we needed to discuss were done then. Do things together and develop common interests. I have some distinct interests. My wife has some distinct interests, but there's a lot of interests that we share. One of those is books. Another one is watching things grow. Another one is animals. So those are some things that we have common. She does not share my interests in shooting and so on. Very, very limited. And I don't share her interest in sewing. So nothing there. So we have other interests that we know that are important. One of the interesting things that the Germans did a study on, and that was they studied the fact that the men that kissed their wife before they went to work in the morning were much more productive, were more fulfilled, and were happier and did a better job than those that didn't. Now, you leave it to the Germans. They're very good at record keeping, and they were good at data and stuff like that. So, you know, if we leave it to some other people, we would say, well, we'll have to make a rule that you have to kiss your wife before you leave for work in the morning, so you do a better job. But you know, that actually would defeat the purpose, wouldn't it? And so I'm going to say that we depend. We don't have very much written, but we depend a lot on the spirit in which it's given. And it works that way in church life very much as well. There's another thing that's very important, and that is to be accountable to each other and let each other know where you are. It's not a good feeling to come home and nobody there without a note or any indication of what's going on. And that doesn't happen very often. But it's important to develop to be accountable where we are. Now, how helpful would it be to take and make? I'm sure all of us have some good ideas on what has built a relationship. And how helpful would it be to write out ideas for everybody to read and to go by? I think it would be very helpful to develop a culture where this is common practice, because it makes so that you don't have to. The one thing that culture does is it makes so that we don't have to make that decision every single time. It becomes a pattern. It becomes a way of life. It becomes the normal thing to do. And it helps us to do the right things without having to make that decision every single time. But culture does not save us. Culture is not the saving part of either in our salvation, but it does help to preserve. And it works that way in church as well. The culture that we develop is not the saving part, but it helps to make us helps to so that we're doing the right thing without having to make that decision every single time. And so when we look at the relationship of Christ and the church, we can see some parallels. And again, let's turn to Ephesians 5. I'm going to start reading here at the last. This is a familiar chapter. It talks about the in verse 21 it says, verse 25 says, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." And then backing up a little bit, in verse 21 it says, "Submitting to yourselves one to another in the fear of God." And then it says, "Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church and is the Savior of the body." And then I'll read from verse 26 on, verse 25 on again. "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hateth his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. And for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they too shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband." You know, it's a blessing to me to see in this verse 32 that he says, "But I speak concerning Christ and the church." This is a great mystery. And a lot of the same principles that apply in making a marriage work apply in making a church work as well. And the church is a beautiful thing to God. It's a beautiful thing that people will voluntarily surrender their personal rights and the things that they have in order to glorify God together as a body. It's a beautiful thing. You know, somebody has said that for people that don't understand marriage, they think marriage is restrictive and is confining after they've been in it for some time. Or maybe they're afraid to commit to it because of that. But there is real freedom. There is real joy. There is real pleasure in that kind of relationship that someone that is looking on just can't quite understand. And for many people, that's the way the church looks at them too. They look at it as a loss of freedom, as restricting and confining. Where God says, this is a beautiful thing. And he refers to the church as his bride, something that is beautiful, something that is very honorable, and something that is lovely. There's a local man in our community here that I think he's been married for probably 25 or 30 years. Anyhow, he continually refers to his wife as his bride. "I will ask my bride," he says. Many of you know him. But that's a blessing to me to see that. And so when we see this, how does the church look to God? It looks at the very best. It looks the very best, just like a good marriage is a benefit to us, and it's a good church life is a benefit to is a good witness to the world around us. If your view of church life is simply of following the rules that were written, we lose the spirit, and it becomes confining. It does become monotonous. It does become boring, and boredom does set in when it's only that way. There was a story told about a person that they were having problems in their marriage, and so they went to see a counselor. And after a time or two, husband and wife went together. The counselor got up joyfully from his seat, and he gave the wife a big hug, and he said, "You are beautiful." And then he told the husband, he says, "This is what your wife needs every night when you come home from work." And so the husband said, "Well, it's not a problem on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday, but Wednesday and Friday I go bowling." And no, he said, "I can bring her here Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, but Wednesday and Friday I go bowling." So, you know, he missed the point by a long ways. But many times we miss the point too. You know, when we see the joy in serving the Lord is not in just doing the right thing at the right time. The right thing will do it if we have that spirit in there. And we must focus on doing the right thing. That's always important. And again, it sometimes works in reverse there too. Doing the right thing will come on. But if our spirit isn't in there, it's not going to last very long. And it's just like this man that said, "Yeah, you can do it." The love was lost. Missing the point. So one of the things that that is easy to do, it makes building good marriages and building church on the same line is good peer pressure. And that was another really blessed point when I saw what I saw yesterday with all these young couples. I can't get myself away from that one. You know, if I would have looked at a couple that was married for 20 years when I got married, I thought those are old people. In fact, I looked at someone that was just a few years older as being pretty old already. When we got married, it was the same day, same week that Andy Yoder died, and I was doing a job for somebody, and I said, "I can't come that day because of the funeral. I need to go to a funeral." And he said, "Was it an old man?" I said, "Yes, it was an old man." And he said, "How old?" I said, "I think maybe 55. He says, "Oh, don't say that. I'm 55. And now I think of how young that was, you know. But to me, he was an old man already. But you know, we have, as a matter of perspective, when we look at what it takes to build a happy home and a happy church, it's going to be when there is a giving, when there's a humility of mind, and we look back at these principles that were given of kindness, of forbearance, of forgiveness, of patience, of courtesy. Let me just read a few verses here. We had read the one on kindness. 1 Corinthians 13:4. "Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up." There was a story recently, or a number of years ago, about a couple here in Fordland that were married for, I might be confused, I'm not sure where the couple was from, but they were married for 80 years. And they were both over 100 years old. And somebody asked them what it took to stay married that long. And, you know, I would have liked to hear that it was just the love that they had for each other. But what they said, actually, is it took a lot of forgiveness. It took a lot of forgiveness. There was another person that was given her secret for a long and happy marriage, and she said, When we got married, someone advised me to make a list of 10 things that if my husband did these 10 things, that I would forgive him for those. And so she said, whenever I got really mad at what he did, I would say, lucky for you, it's one that's on that list. And so they asked her what the list was. And she said, well, you know, I guess I never really made it. But she was exercising forgiveness in a creative way. And it's one of those things that will help go a long ways. Forgiveness, it's just, it can't be overemphasized, the importance of it. We all need it. And we all, we can't demand it. But we can grant it. And that makes all the difference. Courtesy. 1 Peter 3:8. It's interesting to me that the Apostle Paul and the Apostle Peter wrote very pointedly on these issues of husband and wife relations. And in our Sunday school lesson this morning, it points out that the church is built, or it's involving there, that the church is built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets. Okay, so Peter, in 1 Peter 3:8, says, finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous. One of the English words that has changed a lot in the time that this was written was that this word pitiful, it doesn't mean to be a pitiful sight or to be nagging and repressive or oppressive and so on, but it means to be sympathetic and be courteous. And then we talk about humility, Colossians 3:12. Put on, therefore, as elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering. There's so many qualities that are mentioned in just human relations that are amplified in a good marriage. That if it's important, partially important in a general relationship, it's very important in marriage to be humble, be thankful. And then we need to be generous, give the other person the benefit of the doubt, and then our honesty must speak through the filters of kindness and courtesy, and I believe that will be much more effective than just simply being candid or harsh. I'd like to just close with one verse here in Ephesians, in the last verse of the in the book of Ephesians, where he says, grace be with all them that... Grace be with all them that love our Lord Jesus Christ in sincerity. Amen. You know, the spirit that helps to build a happy home, the consideration and the thankfulness that goes along with that is almost identical to the spirit that helps build a happy, a good church life as well. Living because we want to, and not doing the right things because we want to, and not because it's required, is going to go a long ways in building a happy, fulfilled church life. Someone has said, and I think it's so significant, that he says that you feel fulfilled not by the things that you have, but by the things you appreciate. And I have to think of that in both material things and in our church culture, that we're fulfilled not in the things that we have, but in the things that we appreciate. And I think that building a community of God-fearing men and women is an effort that's going is a work that's going to be a blessing wherever. But it's if we have thankfulness as a part of our life, we will be rich by what we appreciate, and a thankful person is an easy person to get along with in many respects. Let's come before the Lord in prayer.